Blog Talk Radio.
Life is a song worth singing.
I can tell.
Sing it. Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing.
I got you.
Sing it.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And I'm your host, Ronald Bethay. And you know those who join us on a regular basis, you know the slogan for the show is, if there's power in numbers, then the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative LLC captures that power for your financial benefit. And the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative LLC is a blueprint for economic self-reliance for solar and renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African-American solar installation companies to address the economic effects of high energy costs at our historically Black colleges and universities, to utilize Black-owned farmlands, HBCU campuses, to develop capacity and initiatives for installing solar and projects to bring down the unemployment and underemployment of young Black African-American men and women locally and nationally, as well as educating the Black community locally and nationally about the economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education in the Black community through Black Talk radio programs such as Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact on Black America. This show is also brought to you on a weekly basis by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BSHBCU Radio Talk Show Initiative, and you can get more information on that initiative by logging on to our website at PositiveChangePC.com, PositiveChangePC.com. Please click on our news GoFundMe link, and you will see our project rationale. You're listening to that project rationale right now over the worldwide net, over Blog Talk Radio, and we're streaming over Facebook and Twitter and YouTube. This show is also brought to you by Scotton Communications Network, specializing in the following areas: public relations, writing, editing, web development, web editing, magazine production, online and traditional, newspaper production, online and traditional, speech writing, book writing, editing and publishing, and speaker bureau management. For further information, you can contact ScottandCommunicationsNetwork.com. That's ScottandCommunicationsNetwork.com. Now, we have a very, very exciting show for you today, and we've got two exciting guests that are holding in my green room, Mr. Evans and Mr. Corley. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. I have a very, very exciting show for our listening audience. And our listening audience, you know you can join us by calling 646-668-2948. Once again, that call-in number is 646-668-2948. Now, there is a lot of things going on here in the DMV market area because we have a worldwide listenership to this program. So I want people to understand that we're focusing on what's going on here in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. And here in the DMV market area, we have a community called Woodbridge. And in that community, we have an organization called the Catholic Archbishop Diocese of Washington, D.C. And they have proposed a project to build a 1.4 megawatt solar farm with approximately about 4,000 solar panels to be installed in Northeast Washington, D.C., and this property sits right on the boundary lines of the District of Columbia and Prince George's County going into Maryland off of Rhode Island Avenue. For those who live in the DMV market area, for geographic purposes. And I have the privilege this morning of having two of those residents who reside in that area and are businessmen. We have the privilege of having Mr. Gregory H. Evans, CNP Vice President, and a homeowner and a resident of that community. And we have the privilege of having Mr. Richard Corley, who is a independent real estate property owner here in the District of Columbia and a resident of that community. And I had the privilege of attending a meeting on Saturday morning where both of these gentlemen were present. Now, I would like to preface before I bring my guests on an article which was written in the Washington Journal about this particular project, because I have gained information from a very, very reliable sources, and we will hit upon that Mr. McDuffie, who is the city councilman from that area, was not unaware of this particular project. Now, this article was published by Mr. Kalish Makey, who is the digital news producer for the Washington Business Journal on November the 28th, 2018. He published this report and it's entitled "DC's Largest Solar Array Proposed for Northeast Site Owned by Catholic Charities." And this was in the Washington Business Journal, November 28, 2018. Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of Washington, D.C. has submitted plans for what will be one of, if not the largest solar arrays in D.C. in an effort to cut its energy costs and funds for improvement to those facilities. The project is to be located on 14 acres surrounding the Gift of Peace House in Covenant, located at 2800 Otis Street Northeast in Woodbridge. Will involve the installation of 4,778 solar panels with a total mounted height of a 7-foot fence, according to the filings with the D.C. Board of Zoning Adjustments. The array is expected to generate 1.7 megawatts of energy. The comparison to D.C. H.D. Woodson High School, which is located at 504 55th Street Northeast, which tops the district's largest solar energy generator, produces 611 kilowatts of energy from its array. Solar arrays currently are located atop about 50% of D.C. government sites, from schools to recreation centers to warehouses, generate 11 megawatts of energy annually. The Catholic Charities owns the Woodbridge land and will lease it to a developer to build the array to receive credit on its PEPCO account for the energy generated. Design plans for the array were produced by Millerville's Maryland-based Solar Energy Services, Inc. Catholic Charities spokesperson declined to name the solar developer. How much the land will be leased for, or how much the panels will cost? She did say the effort will save the charity about $200,000 a year. Catholic Charities intends to use those funds toward maintenance repairs to the gift of house, Peace House, run by the Missionary of Charity, which shelters 38 terminally ill men and women. Mother Teresa, now St. Teresa, founded the Missionary and Charity and opened the DC Gift House of Peace in 1986, largely to serve dying, those folks dying from AIDS. Now, I have just read to our listening audience and this article that was done in the journal back on November 28th, 2018. I was made aware of this array by Mr. Corley, who I have grown to know to be a very, very dependable and business man who is home sets near where this array will be built, as well as Mr. Evans. And without further ado, I want to invite those two gentlemen to the airways of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
I want to start this by looking at how long have you two gentlemen been aware of this proposed project for development in your community, gentlemen?
Well, this is Greg Evans speaking. I've been aware of this in entirety for about, I guess, say 2.5 months, actually.
Mr. Corley?
For me, it's been probably about a month. I might have seen, because I see so many articles, I follow Solar News, so I might have got mixed up, but probably only about a month, and it was by chance, the AMC commissioner, Gail Brevard, gave a flyer to all the nearby residents, and I said, oh, yeah, definitely have to make this because I want to see what's going on. After attending the meeting about 2 weeks ago, I think it's one of those things that the residents here, they had a lot of questions, they had a lot of concerns, but, you know, unlike the education level that I found just by knowing some of the solar and looking at it over the years, is the education level is very low on what solar presents and how it's how energy, generally just how energy is distributed and how we get our energy and where we get it from. Most people are kind of clueless. But, yeah, it was an interesting meeting, and I think most of the people in the community now are getting an understanding that, you know, this solar project is moving forward and moving fast.
Well, I want the listening audience to know that I did reach out to Mrs. Lisa Walsh, who is the commercial solar developer, she is the principal for Solar Energy Services, which is the company that's been contracted with Catholic Charities as the developer for this site. I also reached out to Catholic Charities for Father John Enzler, who I had the privilege of meeting very briefly at the meeting on Saturday morning. Now, this show, which is entitled Solar Now and the Future with its Economic Impact on Black America, and what I want our listening audience to be aware of is that this is not happening in a vacuum. Washington, D.C. has just passed the Omnibus Act of 2000 and a Clean Energy Bill for 2000 18th, which was just recently passed by the council. And in doing so, they created one of the toughest and highest energy renewable portfolio standard regulation aggressive laws in the country, where it was the law was originally passed in 2016 by the council and signed off by Mayor Bowser, and she signed into law in July of 2016 the Renewable Portfolio Standard Act, which had a 5% carve out for solar. Now, under that carve out, there is a renewable portfolio standard fine that is attached to PEPCO, which is the subsidiary of Exelon Corporation, which is the energy utility provider for our nation's capital. And by the way, D.C. residents, the total amount of money spent for energy annually is $1.8 billion to power the nation's capital. Now, when we begin to look at this thing and look at the fact that the overriding regulators for the District of Columbia, who regulates the issues, which is the Public Service Commission, who is supposed to be there to protect the interests of the ratepayers on your gas, electric, and now communications, and now your water bills, because that has recently been transferred over to the D.C. Public Service Commission, but you have the People's Council, which is the legal arm, which in fact files the different pieces of legal petitions and represents that agency. And they both were appointed by Congress in 1913. So this is not a body that just came around yesterday. And the point that I'm driving for, to make a long story short, is the District of Columbia, because of the shortfall of D.C.-based solar in fiscal year 2016, paid $15 million extra for energy. Now, this PEPCO writes the check, and they are able to pass these fees on to the ratepayers in the form of surcharges on their bills. In 2017, that jumped from $15 million to $26.5 million. And what is happening is that the District of Columbia has also a clean water fee, which is attached to your water bill, which represents the same surcharge. It's called the clean water fee. And some churches were paying up as much as $2,000 a month for the fee. If you in fact, and I don't even want to bring about up the number that they were charging if the church owned the cemetery land or property, if they had a cemetery attached to the church in the District of Columbia. So I know back on May 15, 2018, that the D.C. clergy turned out the city council hearings about this. Now, these fees are multiplying because of something called the Green Bank, which is supposed to be financed by the new, what they call, Sustainable Energy Trust Fund, and they will be passed on in compliance fees, and the amount of money that was requested by DOEE, by Tommy Wells, was $100 million to finance this Green Bank. Well, according to Betty Ann Kane, the outgoing chair of the Public Service Commission, they are going to raise $156.6 million more than they need, $256 million, which will be passed on also to the D.C. ratepayers on their gas and electric bills over that same 12-year span. So my issue with this is you have a Solar for All program, which was the basic premise that they said they're going to help 100,000 low and moderate income residents in D.C. cut their energy costs by year 2032. But projects like this, which will generate a large amount of energy, which will be sold back to Pepco, will generate very, very large returns for this project. How has the developer, how has the Archdiocese of Washington, D.C., spoken to the community of Woodbridge about using their influence to help get this D.C. residential PACE program put into action in the district, since you already have the commercial PACE program, which I have explained time and time again to our listening audience, and I will for the sake of this conversation, is a public policy passed by Congress which looks at energy upgrades the same way as public benefits such as sewer and water. And this program allows private monies, investment dollars, to pay for 100% of the costs associated with this. So it gives the developers the ability to borrow the money to go in to develop projects, both on the commercial and residential side. But I will not give the name of the company. I sat down with one of those companies, and they indicated they have a $300 million to invest in commercial PACE. Then we're not going to invest any money in residential, because they cannot get the return on their investment because of this issue of space on a rooftop on a residential home. So they are encouraging their developers and people who are coming to them to bring them commercial projects for commercial PACE. Now, you can't tell people how to spend their money, but why am I going into all this before I bring these gentlemen back on? Because I want to make sure that our community understands that they're going to be the ones paying for this Estrex values, because the District of Columbia could have allowed Pepco to purchase these Estrex or certificates from sources outside of D.C., and you wouldn't have this issue, but you wouldn't have the highest Estrex values in the country either. So I'm saying that this whole issue about these Estrex values is being socially and economically engineered to prop up the return of investment on people who are able to get into this issue, into this, get these PV systems on their homes. But if when you don't put any money in rooftop repair, and you've already collected over $72 million of ratepayers' monies, and the former head of the Public Service Commission had to go to war to get the first funding to come out of DEOE in 2017, which was $13 million, and only one African-American grantee was awarded a $2 million grant. And we began to look at how does the black community benefit from this. Now, gentlemen, I think I put a lot on your plate, but I wanted to put those talking points out there for you so you can home in on that.
Yeah, well, I,
Mr. Carter?
This is Greg.
Yeah.
I'll take a stab at this. Yes, sir. I think you're exactly right in saying that this is by design. Mr. Corley had a point there that the education level is low when it comes to alternative energy in the black community. And that's by design. This Exelon company, even though they're working with Pepco, have taken over Pepco here, which we did push back against in the District of Columbia. They also do power across the country and generally have pushed back against solar power, except
no
questions like this where it's commercial, because they don't want the individual consumer to get a whiff of the fact that, I mean, because there are certain places where some people have actually even taken their homes off the grid with alternative energy and fuels. But they're pushing back against this just because of what you're saying. They don't want to have to lose that revenue that they're getting from the individual consumer. But they can make more money with these large farms commercially than they can with the individual consumer. And that's why they want to keep the individual consumer in the dark about solar power and other alternative energies.
Well, yeah, I'll have to certainly agree with that. And the other thing is, too, is that even with this Catholic Charities farm that's going to be built, Pepco's going to buy the energy for them at something like 3 cents. They sell it back to us, so they make us pay somewhere, you know, way more than that, probably 3, 4, 5 times more than what they're going to for this energy that's being produced. So, I mean, you know, they are a built-in monopoly that, you know, just keeping us in the dark, keeping us uninformed. Most folks don't know how the energy gets to their house. And then, you know, just like we went to that meeting, they get tied into silly environmental issues like whether or not, you know, this is going to be toxic to the community, whether or not the animals are going to be able to, or the deer and other things are going to be able to go around that. And nobody's looking at the existing infrastructure that we have, which has a lot of EMFs and PCBs and certain transformers and things of that sort. So, I expect really to be truthful about it because of the politicians who are somewhat involved in this too, so far as getting the word out and also informing the community about the different options that they have in energy. I just expect this thing
Well, Mr. Carter, I want to stop you right there. I want to stop you right there. And I want to put a plug in it right there because I want to bring you right back in. But I want to make a point. The point is, on October 9th, 2009, yours truly, representing Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, I testified in front of Mary Shea about this same issue on October the 29th, 2018. I testified in front of Kevin McDuffie, your councilman from that area. Now, I understand from speaking with Mr. Evans on yesterday that they had a community meeting and that a representative from the councilman's office was there and that he indicated that the councilman knows nothing about this project. So, Mr. Evans, could you weigh in on that, please?
Yeah, that's very true. We had a representative of the council member's office, and many of the members of our block club, the T-Top block club, that were there, questioned him as to why is it that we're not hearing from the council member. And he said, well, the council member is not aware of this. And many of us, you know, our mouths just dropped because that can't be possible. If you've got a project such as this that's going to affect 12 facilities that Catholic Charities owns across the city, it's going to generate more power than those facilities can use, and you don't have anything like this within 10 miles of the District of Columbia, there's no way that our elected representative doesn't know about it. So we were all just taken aback by that. We haven't had a chance to reach out to him specifically But his representative was supposed to take this back to him, but we haven't heard back yet.
Well, Mr. Coyle, I want you to respond to the information you just heard from Mr. Evans, because to me, this is where I'm having a problem with the whole issue of making it plain to our community. And what I try to do with this show, I try to speak truth to power, because I know for a fact on October 29th, 2018, when I testified, I put forward the Marion S. Berry John Wilson's Reparations Clean Energy Amendment Act of 2018 to him in my testimony. And it went on to say that 35% of all sustainable energy trusts set fee increases collected on gas, electric, and gas and electric residents of the District of Columbia ratepayers must be deposited in an African American owned bank and in operation, that's in operation in the District of Columbia, passing the property assessment clean energy pace for residential homes in the D.C. area, because D.C. has already passed commercial pace for commercial use in D.C.
Yeah, but
the PACE program is a government financing policy that classifies energy savings upgrades as public benefit like sewer and water roads extension. This enables 100% of hard and soft projects to be funded by private industry, repaid via the surcharge on the property tax bill. Payback periods match the equipment life of 20 years or longer. Financing is based on the value of the property, which allows home owners to borrow between 20 to 35% of the property values. This eliminates the issue of credit and equity in the property. Residential PACE has already been passed and implemented in several counties in California. We also asked the council that they needed to redirect $4 million from the $8 million received from the BW $2.7 billion settlement, rather than spending $2.3 million to replace the aging locomotive switch cars at Union Station, $5 million for replacing diesel buses and electric buses on and replacing diesel refuse tanks with either compressed natural gas or electric trucks, $200,000 on tailpipe retrofits to reduce NOXs. We asked them to put $2 million for roof repair for low and moderate income homeowners that meet the 80% AMI that have qualified for the Solar for All program who live in a citywide. $1 million for workforce development for programs to train diesel residents that are interested in becoming PV installers, electricians for electrical wiring for EV infrastructure in DC, and energy advisors. $1 million for marketing and advertising engagement programs for the black community. Now, we put this forth to both Bowser, Shea, and to McDuffie in our testimonies on October 9th and October 29th. Now, this solar median area median income that the Solar for All program and the District of Columbia's new energy initiative, district goal is to reduce the energy bills of 100 low and moderate income residents by 50% by 2032. Families with incomes up to 80%. A household of 8, $102,250. Household of 7, $96,050. Household of 6, $89,50. Household of 5, $83,65. Household of 4, $77,450. Household of 3, $69,750. Household of 2, $62,000. Household of 1, $54,000. This specific Solar for All program is open only to single-family homes or row houses and townhouses. Now, I read that information to say this is the catalyst for which the original renewable portfolio standard law with a 5% carbon out at 50% was passed. It is now 10%. If people who live in Woodbridge incomes will not allow them to qualify for this program, they have no alternatives to offset these high compliance fees other than using residential PACE, because the information that has been gathered by Neighborhoods United that had received a $2 million grant from DOEE and has done information sessions in all 8 wards of the city says that the average homeowner is 55 years or older. They're a baby boomer. They live in their homes single by themselves. The whole houses are paid for, but they don't have money to come out of pocket to repair their roofs. The city put no money in roof repair infrastructure. And that is some of the issues that I think that could have been brought up, put on the front end of this development, and asked the developers to play a role to support these projects for supporting those Woodbridge residents. And because the more energy that is generated, the more it reduces the shortfall, and this reduces these compliance fees. But if you're not going to put no money to fix the roof on the people's houses after you put could collect $70-something million and you put out $13 million with none for roof repair, this makes no sense to me. This is madness. Gentlemen, would you please, one of me or both of you can weigh in on that. Hello?
Oh, yeah, I'm still here.
Mr. Evans?
I don't know if Mr. Evans is still there, but here's the thing, and I have a little noise in the back. I might have to move to another location. Here's the thing. I mean, we're going at this, or you're going at this, and we're all going at this. It's basically you're taking a match towards a fire truck. These guys are coming out, and many of them, you know, when you start talking about Exelon and Pepco and some of these other entities, they have a lot of funding coming in on a yearly, weekly, daily basis. So, and I understand the passion and everything else that we have to get this information out. But we are, we're fighting an uphill battle, which you know. And that includes going down to the meetings at the city council and everywhere else we go. So, you know, I applaud you for and all those who are out here trying to get this information out to the community. It's just a tough haul. It's a tough battle because we're working with an uninformed community.
Guess what, Richard? That's what they told Dr. King. That's what they told anybody that stood up in any arena. Oh, you got a tough battle. Nothing's never been easy.
Here's the thing I want to say about with Dr. King. We had a direct foot on our neck. At this point, you know, most of the folks, and they've gotten very good at it. You know, when they get their bill, you already said like 2017, you paid $24 million, $50 million. I don't know what we paid. But those things were paid, and most folks didn't go down to City Hall. We just had a mayoral election here just 2 months ago, and basically all the incumbents won. So what I'm saying is that even in the community, most folks pay these bills, and they don't know what they're paying. They just pay it, and that's just the way it goes. Now, raising awareness is another thing, which I agree. But you've thrown out about 1,000 different points. But the biggest point is that most of these things are being paid for, whether it's through the gas, electric, or water. All these utility things are already in the bank with the D.C. government. And these other things that Pepco is writing and getting back through the, you know, they're going to send back through the almost 1 million folks who have electricity and paying for electricity, whether it's businesses or anything else. So and I agree with you on all these other different points on having homeowners be able to fix their roofs, whether it's through subsidies, through other nonprofits that can help us fix our roofs and put solar on. But the education,
this is what I'm saying, Richard.
Gap. There's a big gap in education.
Yeah, well, I agree. I totally agree. But people are feeling this in their pocketbook, and they don't understand why these charges are on their bills. And what nobody is saying to them is that you are funding your own demise. Now, if they're going to take $256 million from D.C. ratepayers over the next 12 years from 2020 to 2032 to fund a green bank, which they didn't even have to go that route. The green bank in Montgomery County was funded by funds from the Exelon Pepco merger. Well, Washington, D.C. received more money than Montgomery County. But Montgomery County didn't take that approach that they're going to fund their green bank up there with surcharges on the ratepayers' bill to sustain the funding for that bank over that 12-year period. Now, they're talking about $3 billion worth of solar infrastructure work inside the District of Columbia. Now, if they're going to create this, I call it windfall, well, what black businesses benefit from this? We only have about 9,000 solar installation companies and installation companies and installers. We got approximately about 21, and we got about 8 of those companies that are certified companies right here doing business, African-American companies inside D.C. So these companies should be growing tooth and nail. But we both know, Richard, that's not the case. So what I'm saying is nobody raises the issue about the economics and the fact that the community has some leverage, because they do have leverage. They can go to these public meetings because they're holding meetings all over the city talking about equity and solar and all this kind of garbage. And they're talking about community solar programs. All of these advocacy groups are getting your tax dollars and telling you about these about equity and this and equity and that. All I'm saying to you is when we begin to look at the bigger picture of economics in the energy industry, the American Association of Blacks in Energy put out a report in 2009. Black folks spent $41 billion for energy in America. They had 0.1% of the jobs. They had 0.8% of the wealth from the industry. And we had no suppliers in the downline of any of this. This is an industry just like everybody else's in any other industry. And when you pay into that industry, and if you don't demand nothing from that industry, you don't get nothing back. But a few black folks who get some jobs, and they can't talk to nobody. And see, this is one of the issues I have with this show. Anytime you contact DOEE, you can't talk to nobody up there because they got to get permission before they can come on the airways and talk about any of these programs that are supposed to be out here to help the people. It's the same way over here with the Prince George's County government. I just had Mrs. Erica Bannerman, who's head of their sustainability department, on phone conversation yesterday, and they ended up telling me, and I had to take this to my city council person, my congressman, and my senator, and my representatives in Annapolis, which I went to all bases before I went public with this. But after I went and I got the what they call 365-degree runaround, then I went public with it. So when Cardin's office got it, they went to the Congressional Research Services, and they found out, because I live in zip code 209, and I live inside the Beltway of Ward 9, which is an inside joke called Prince George's County, that There is nothing in the congressional record says that residents who live in zip code 209 should be excluded from the Transitioning Neighborhood Initiative, which will give a homeowner $10,000 grant to help put a PV system on one's home in PG County. Guess what? I'm told until the new county executive gets in there and she tweaks it, that's the way it is. I said, well, somebody better help get in there and tweak it because they're going to see me. I'm like Richard Pryor joke said, Ms. Rudolph, you're going to see me again. So what I'm saying is I understand what you're talking about when you're talking about fighting power and people have that, but you have power and the residents in that room have power too. Because let me tell you something, brother. Them folks in the Archdiocese, they was as nervous as a cat giving birth with an audience Saturday morning in there. Y'all had them folks shook. And a lot of them got up out there and ran up out that room because they don't know whether they know they're going to get this passed through zoning and they're going to move on. But I clearly invited you gentlemen on this show to ask you what input or what do y'all want in return?
Well, Mr. Evans,
you first.
You know, some of what the other guests were saying was true, is that a lot of this is an uphill battle and where people pay their bills, their energy bills, and they know that these excessive charges or these extra charges are on there, but it seems to be too much for them or it's overwhelming for them, so they just go ahead and pay. But, you know, we've got to do education. We've got to stay ahead of the game. I'm just even now, I don't know if a lot of people are aware that, you know, they have reduced the credit for buying electric vehicles. I think that expired, I think it was the end of the last year, that now you can't get the same credit that they were giving out. That
it was $7,500 federal tax credit if you bought an electric vehicle, and that was nationwide.
Right.
And I know that the Solar Industry Trade Association, SEIA, had already held with Congress shut down. They were the first one to get in to talk to the new Congress about reinstating that $7,500 federal tax credit. So for those folks who can afford an electric vehicle, who are 9 out of 10 in a different income bracket than 99.9% of the African American community, they have already registered their concerns with the powers that be. And that's why they have this major clean energy bill as one of the first things that's going to be addressed. What my concerns about around the clean energy industry is what's in the cards for our folk from the residential to the commercial side to the business side. How do we let our communities know that we're helping finance this energy industry and everybody's benefiting from it other than us? This makes no sense. We're talking about a $1 billion industry that we contribute into this industry. We're probably spending close to $100 billion a year as African Americans for energy today. The numbers I quoted to you are 10 years old. The American Association of Blacks in Energy, which is one of the only credible organizations that we have, and trying to get black folks who work in this industry every year, and they have this information, but they can't talk to nobody, sir. They have you got to put in a request for in Prince George's County for Mrs. Beckman. You got to request for her to the executive office for her to be able to come on a radio show just to even share information about programs. Well, you get some of the same pushback from DOEE. but they always got something up on their website. Most, thousands of black folks, and especially in our communities, don't even have computers. And everything is done website and email. So when you go to these meetings, you're going to find very few of our folks there, because most of our young people who have all of this technology walking around with them in the form of a these phones, using for nothing but for social networking. So I'm saying that we have a way to get this information out, but we have to have communities such as yours who have stakes in what's going on in their community to come forward and tell your elected officials what you want out this deal as it relates to them getting some help.
Well, here's the thing, Rod, and I know Brother Evans is still making some points, but I just want to make this point. We know that technology is moving more and more towards electric and battery and storage and those things. I know that, you know, just studying the industry and just seeing things. Like when I go into Home Depot, you know, more of your power tubes are becoming electric. Well, not batteries. And more your, the same thing with cars overseas. You see it. So you have a competition that's way above our level that's happening with the fossil fuel industry and also with the electricity industry. You have these corporations and power companies that are, like Brother Evans was saying, they're more concerned than you were saying. They're more concerned with large solar farms than the individual, Brother Evans was saying, than the individual person coming on and having solar panels on their roof. But you know that the solar panels have come down. We know that it's going to happen. In regards to the Catholic Charities program, what they're trying to do is for themselves, as you said at the beginning of your show, is that, hey, look, you know, they're looking at the energy costs, and they're getting, Pepco's not doing too many favors to them, because they're only paying 3 cents a kilowatt for the energy that they're going to make once they get this thing developed. And then they got a cost in getting it developed also. So a lot of people are trying to get off the grid. A lot of people are trying to get off the grid, but Pepco is probably saying to themselves, hey, look, you know, we have a certain, we can't continue to have our revenue go down, too. So, I mean, that's just a part of, just like, I mean, you're a football guy, you understand it's competition out there. But going back to the meeting that you attended.
Well, I understand a competition, Mr. Corley, but I also understand
something. We're uninformed. You're playing against a team. It's like Alabama or Clemson, and we're sending out a team of elementary school kids to play football against somebody, a big league team. Now, I agree, yeah, we need to get this information out. But right now, in my estimation, and what I see out there on the playing field, is that we don't have enough people to even inform, to even understand that they need to get out there, put their pads on, and get out there and play football, or whatever, if you want to put it in that type.
Well, this is how I look at it, Brother Richard Corley. When you go to the ballot box and you vote for a candidate, if you know what their position is on residential pace and whether he would in fact push DOE to implement the program, because see, the law is already passed, it's already in place. You're not asking the city council and the mayor to pass no law, they've already passed it. They just didn't implement the program for residential homeowners in the district. They implemented to help residential, which is developers and commercial property owners. I don't have a problem with either one of them. My issue is saying, if you're going to collect $256 million and you already collected close to $100 million that you've already collected in surcharges, this is not for energy that people use. These were the shortfalls because the PJM area, which stands for Pennsylvania, Jersey, and Maryland, which is composed of the large regulators who regulate these territories, which is 12 states, and the District of Columbia, has said for in the Renewable Portfolio Standard law for this market area, and they control 70% of the wholesale prices, which is coal and natural gas. And you say you only have 2%. That means, as Mrs. Sandra Fry, who's the general counsel for the D.C. Public Service Commission, lead attorney, said in her testimony on October 9th in front of Mary Shea, you cannot buy what you cannot get. When regulators set this bar, and then you got advocacy organizations that will come out and say, oh, we need renewable portfolio standard laws 100% because we need to push back against coal and fossil fuels. Well, I'm not arguing that. I understand global warming. I'm saying to you, you don't turn around then and say to the utility company, well, you can't buy your extracts from outside of the District of Columbia for solar when you allow them to buy the extracts for wind, biomass, and hydrogenetics. If you eliminate that and allow Pepco to purchase these credits from wind farms from wherever they may be located, that won't be a problem. Pepco can do that, and Pepco turns around and says, well, then we don't have to pass these surcharges on to our ratepayers. That eliminates the funding for the Solar for All program. That eliminates the funding for the Green Bank. But when you say it must come from the physical landmass of the District of Columbia, knowing you don't have enough space, that's going to artificially inflate the extracts values per kilowatt hour, make them the highest in the nation, give you the most aggressive laws so people who can afford to get PV systems on their roofs can financially benefit. Well, this is going to help for us folks who of color who are living in these homes out of their homes if they can't pay their bills, and somebody else can come in who can afford to live there. And we don't have to talk about the 2,000-pound gorilla in the room, which is the disparity of income between whites and blacks and people of color in Washington, D.C. It's off the chain. So we have to look at what's in the room and talk the truth to power, because if you don't, we done already. I understand it's a fight, but I'm saying that everybody's at stake. We look at the situation with the federal government being shut down on over an issue called a wall. This man says, oh, we got to have a wall. Well, everybody who has some sense understands that $5 billion in the wall ain't going to solve that problem. And I'm not going to get into all that. But I'm saying is you don't hold 800,000+ people, federal government workers, hostage because you can't get what you want, but one man did stop that show. The government sat down. The Democrats are saying, no, we're not going to contribute one dime to it. And 45 is saying, if you don't send me what I want, I'm not going to sign it. So we're at an impasse. While we're at the impasse, people who are not getting their checks, not only are they getting hit with the regular bills, they're getting hit with these extra surcharges on their bills, gentlemen. So whether we like it or not, we in it. So I'm not going to take no more of you gentlemen's time, because y'all only agreed to give me 30 minutes, but I think this has been a spirited conversation. And do you gentlemen like, what would you like to share with our listening audience in closing?
Well, I'll go ahead. Greg Evans speaking. I'll go ahead. I think that a lot of the points that you're making are valid, but what needs to be done is, because I'm almost positive that most of the consumers, and I know the residents and members of our block club, are not aware of the legislation that was passed, the fact that this is already in place. They need to be made aware of that. They also need to be given the opportunity to confront these elected officials that have already agreed to this in voting for this as to why the community is not informed and not given information as to how they can benefit from the solar power and solar energy. That's what I believe needs to be done.
Well, Mr. Evans, I agree with you 2,000%, and that's what this platform here, that's why I created it, that's why I struggled to keep it on the airways, and that's what we try to do is make it plain, because I call Neighborhoods United, their community engagement director, Mrs. Yasmin Riviera, right before I came on the show. I was still calling around because they had some information up on their website, which I felt was misleading. They said that the Green Bank is going to be funded by fees attached to fossil fuel companies. Well, they didn't go on to say, well, that is true. They didn't say anything that was incorrect, but it's a play on words. They didn't say that after DEPCO is fined, then those compliance fees will be passed on to the D.C. ratepayers in the form of compliance fees on the gas, electric, and water bills. See, they didn't say that, and they need to say that, because people going, if we are paying for this stuff every day, Joe Blow, not the big folks. Everybody's paying, but the big folks can, who got the six-figure incomes, they can afford to pay for it. It's not an issue. But when you're dealing with so many of us who are baby boomers who are now on fixed incomes, when you get to talking $50 to $150 extra dollars a month on one bill, that's a sizable hit for a lot of folk. And that's what my concerns are about, looking at who is this actually affecting, because when we began to look at where the rubber meets the road, a lot of our young African-American millennials cannot purchase homes here in the DMV market area, and a lot of them are forced to move back home with their parents. And they are not in a position, a lot of these kids. They're not necessarily bad kids. They went to school, got an education. They got out in this marketplace. And even though there's supposed to be so many plentiful jobs, well, I know a lot of educated black kids out here every day looking for work and can't find it. So you can get two sides against the middle and go right down the center, but what do you believe? What you hear or what you see with your own lying eyes? So that's what this show is about. We tried to bring folk from the community. You are the community, you and Mr. Corley, and I want to thank you very much, both of you gentlemen, for taking time from your very, very busy schedule to join us on this platform today about this discussion, because I think that this discussion won't go away, because as we heard on Saturday morning from the gentleman with Catholic Charities who was in charge of their fundraising, he said that there's been several other petitions filed, and this same issue is going to pop up in D.C. several other times, and it's just getting started. So I think because this is happening in Woodbridge, people who are listening to this show shouldn't think that this is just a vacuum. I think this is going to happen on a repetitive basis in the District of Columbia, and I think what goes on in D.C. affects black folk around the United States of America, because Washington, D.C. is what I call a test tube baby. They try it out here, and if they can run that Murphy here, then it goes out all over the country. So we have a lot on us here living in this DMV market area by just physically being here, but a lot of people don't understand that. And I want to thank you, gentlemen, for taking time from your busy schedule to join us on Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact on Black America.
Thank you.
Ron, I want to thank you for getting this information out, for your passion and getting this information out to the community. Thank you.
You're more than welcome.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Evans. Thank you, Mr. Corley. And that was Mr. Evans, and that was Mr. Richard Corley, who just joined us on our first segment of this show today. Because, see, these issues are not going away, audience. Now, you can reach us by dialing 646-668-2948. Once again, you can reach us by dialing 646-668-2948. Because when you begin to look at the bigger picture, I toil in here every day because I'm wearing multiple hats as producing this show, running a cooperative, looking at the issues facing solar developers, large and small, as well as trying to work with African American solar installation companies. There are just a few of them. A lot of them don't understand that even though they're few in numbers, if they would come together under an umbrella, which we have put together for those developers, that it would give them, each as individuals, empower the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative by just joining our membership, which is not a hell of a lot. And I'm going to go into talking about the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, who we are, what we do, and what we've been doing with this platform since we created, after we take a commercial break here on the airways of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact.
Life is a song worth singing.
I can too.
Sing it. Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing.
I got you.
Sing it.
Welcome, welcome back to Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And we talked about the issue, and I did bring that issue up in our top segment of our show about what is the truth about the Sustainability Energy Trust Fund, Green Bank of Washington, D.C., and how is it going to be financed? Now, as I indicated to you, I placed a call into Mrs. Yasmin Riviera, who is the Community Engagement Director for Neighborhoods United, formerly known as DC Sun. And when you began to look at the information that is put out by DC Sun, it's excellent information. They do an outstanding job with what they do. But a lot of times, information is being put out, which I have some issues with. For example, I've been to numerous neighborhood information sessions, and during those sessions, Neighborhoods United, they had instructed their engagement folk to let the communities, residents who came out to these sessions, there's no money for roof repair from the Solar for All program. Well, I called down to Councilwoman Mary Shea's office, spoke with one of her staff members, and they said, oh, no, that's not the case. Solar for All funding can be used to do roof repair. Well, I didn't leave it there. I went to DCSEU. I went to one of their meetings. They are located at 80 M Street in Southeast Washington, D.C., on M Street, right in the Navy Yard. They had a meeting there, which they were talking about the RFAs for contracts, which today is the last day if you are a contractor and you're interested in contracting with DCSU with the Solar for All program. They put the RFA out several months back, and today was the final day to submit your proposal. So I had spoken with developers, some large, some small, and a lot of them have chose not to even apply for the Solar for All program. And back in I think that was a May or July meeting that I attended, I asked a question to Mr. Hill, who has the contracting component for DCSU. Can the developers use Solar for All funding to repair the roof on homeowners that have qualified for the program, meet their 80% area median income, gone online, registered with DOEE, been vetted by the program and apply? He said that's at the discretion of the installer or the developer. Well, either you can or you can't. If you tell a developer who's not making that much profit off the deal from the first place, if the roof is in ill repair, you don't have to install a system on that home. And you may need some electrical work also done there, because you may have to replace wiring as clear as a new breaker box with an old fuse box, because some of these homes are this old. So if you're not going to provide any funding, and that's infrastructure funding, and then you already collected over $70 million, through the surcharges that's been in place since 2014, you've been collecting this money. It's 2019. We 5 years down the road. You've been collecting this money all this time, but you wouldn't put no money in for infrastructure, roof repair. All roofs have value. And that is what I'm getting back from officials from Pepco. Let me make it plain. I went down in July, the Pepco was hosting public meetings on electric vehicle infrastructure proposal that they were putting together to submit to the Public Service Commission for consideration, for approval. They were asking 15 point something million dollars, by the way, which will also be passed on in some form of compliance fee to D.C. ratepayers. Now, when we begin to look at what happens even though you only had in July of last year 674 D.C. residents who actually had electric vehicles that was registered with the Department of Public Motors here in Washington, D.C. I understand that there's been a large number of purchases of electric vehicles because people went out and purchased these vehicles before the $7,500 federal tax credit expired on December 31st, 2018. So if one did, then they were able to take advantage of that. The issue comes back with who could afford to do that. I looked at several prices on these electric vehicles. I even came on this show and talked about the fact that Nissan had a $5,000 rebate program, which was not made available to D.C. residents. I contacted the Public Service Commission. I contacted Pepco. I said, well, why are you engaged in a program where you are sponsoring an event, but yet D.C. residents can't, ratepayers can't participate in it, but in all of Northern Virginia, but Maryland and other states could, because Nissan said that they could. But people in D.C. and in Virginia, they're paying utility bills to Pepco, too. It says a Pepco ratepayer. See, this is where I have an issue with a lot of things that I see that go on in this renewable energy industry. And it, like, sort of goes over the top of people's heads. So when you get to calling around, talking to agencies that's supposed to have some input, they glaze over it and say, oh, well, you know, we'll get back to you, or, you know, what did they say? Well, I already got my response. I emailed it to you. I'm trying to say to you, does this make any sense? If the program is supposed to provide a $5,000 rebate with the $7,500 federal rebate, that was $12,500 people could have taken advantage of in the District of Columbia. And maybe more people of color would have jumped on that, but they couldn't take advantage of it. Now it's over with. See, these are things that are economic issues, because everybody got to have transportation. And if they're going to force people to go and purchase electric vehicles because their old 10 or 12 year old gas vehicle, which may be still be in good shape, but it can't stand up to the new emission standards are put on folk, and then you forcing people back in the marketplace, and they got to go buy an electric vehicle. See, this is what I'm saying, and the infrastructure piece is going to be financed by ratepayers, but the manufacturers and the dealerships who sell the cars, they got no skin in the damn game. So people could ask the questions, well, why is it that? Well, I didn't make the rules. I'm just explaining what's going on. What we observe by going to events, getting information, going through the information, reading the information, and raising questions. But nevertheless, we're going to continue to follow our scheduled agenda today here on Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. Now, we want to talk a little bit, shift gears now, and talk a little bit about the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, HBCU Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative. And people can get more information by logging on to our website at positivechangepc.com. Once again, that's positivechangepc.com. You can click on our GoFundMe link. And if you, after reading the project rationale for this, then you can determine whether or not it's something that you may want to support. The peace, the Positive Change Persons Incorporated, Cooperative, HBCU, which stands for Historically Black Colleges and Universities, Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative. We have had interviews with representatives of the private, public, and nonprofit sectors, informing our listeners about the benefits of installing solar panels and every subject matter of economic interest surrounding the solar and renewable energy industry. We have discussed the important roles Black Americans play every day in their jobs in the solar and renewable energy industry. That would be great if I could get some of them to talk. Guests have included Black American owners of solar companies such as Gilbert Campbell, co-founder and managing partner of Vote Energy, head of the Department of Energy and Environment in Washington, D.C., Tommy Wells, both federal, state, and local and private sector. We've had Tommy Wells on once. Nonprofit and nonprofit policymakers, which I've had Mrs. Anna Schulman of D.C. Neighborhoods United. She's been on these airways in the past. These are nonprofit policymakers here, right here in the nation's capital. We have invited the president and founder of the Green for All team, Mr. Van Jones, who is a Black American-owned Yale-educated attorney and CNN political commentator. He authored two New York Times best-selling books, The Green Economy of 2008 and Rebuilding the Dream of 2012. The second book chronicles his journey as an environmental and human rights activist and becoming a White House policy advisor. He was the main advocate for the Green Jobs Act, signed into law by George W. Bush in 2007. The Green Jobs Act was the first piece of federal legislation to codify the term green jobs. During Obama's administration, this resulted in $500 million in national funding for green job training. This show has served to support local, national, and international discussions about environmental education, renewable energy projects, and initiatives to educate the Black communities of color nationwide that are and have historically been beset by human and civil rights violations, including the disproportionate exposure to pollutions, crime, substandard living conditions, and more. The NAACP Environmental Justice Legal Defense Fund published a report stating that African Americans, excuse me, we had a slight snafu with our mic here in the studios. It went on to say that African Americans reside near energy production facilities, including coal-fired plants, including nuclear plants, or biomass plants, are more likely to suffer from negative health impacts of prolonged exposure to smog, lead, asbestos, mercury, arsenic, sulfur dioxide, nitrogen oxide, and other toxins than any other group of Americans. Prolonged exposure to toxins from these energy-producing facilities, this is tied to birth defects, heart disease, asthma attacks, lung disease, learning disabilities, and even more low property values. Approximately 68% of African Americans live within 30 miles of a coal-fired plant, which produces the largest portion of energy compared to any other energy production type. And as I went on to say, that here in the nation's capital, which has an energy budget of $1.8 billion a year, which is spent for energy by D.C. residents, the wholesale leases, which are set by the PJM, 70% of that is coal and natural gas. Our goal is to make the economic impacts of climate change and solar energy and other forms of renewable energy a major conversation in the Black community to increase environmental public awareness and knowledge about environmental vent and initiatives such as Washington, D.C. New Solar for All Initiative, which will increase the conversation on issues and the need for environmental and renewable energy education in the Black community. If anybody has followed me, they know that I have been one of the biggest supporters of this Solar for All program. But I don't support going out and tell people that you don't have money for roof repair if you do. Now, if you don't, and they haven't put enough funding in the program for that purpose, then you need to say that. We need to come together and say, let's fight for funding for that, since they're taking the money from us, the rate payers anyway. See, this is not something that we're not paying into. We all are paying into this, okay? I met with Morgan State University, former director of underwriting at WEAE, Mrs. Michelle Pettis. She's no longer there in Baltimore, Maryland. I met with Jeff Paris, the general manager of WPFW 89.3 FM radio in Washington, D.C. Both stations have expressed a strong interest in picking up this show, but I must raise sponsorship dollars to underwrite the show because both stations are public service stations and both are non-commercial stations. That means you cannot go out and get commercial money for a show of this nature. So you got to have some underwriters and some sponsors. And we work tirelessly on that issue. I mean, I just contacted NBC, which has a technology initiative. And the lady told me, if your nonprofit didn't receive $100,000 last year, and you can show us that on your 990 through our Black Sports Legends 501c3 Charities Foundation, you couldn't even apply for a grant. And that particular grant sets this format with what we do with this show. So there's always impediments and reasons for you to want to throw your hands up, but I was raised and coached, and I played something called organized ball. I played basketball. I played football. I played not much baseball, but I played ran track. And one thing that coaches instill in me, it's called never die. It's called never die. And even though people may be outweigh you, may be stronger than you, that don't mean that you can't use your mind and come up with a strategy. And sometimes, if you can't win it, you can make it a hell of a game. So, in this situation, in this ball game, we're in around energy. We act as though we don't have anything. We don't bring nothing to the table. And the main equalizer is called cash that you pay for every month when you pay your utility bill. So it's just a matter of getting yourself educated around the issues that you need to be educated around. Now, this platform brings that to you every week. So we're asking people to log on to our website at positivechangepc.com, click on our GoFundMe link, and if you care to make a contribution, please do, because we beat this drum every week. This is not something we do. We do this. This is a job, and we're not being compensated for it. And everything costs. So if you listen to this program, pass the word. Get other people to listen to this program, because I think we're bringing news that you can definitely use, and we're bringing information that you're not going to hear on a lot of commercial radio, especially when you get to talking about stepping on the toes of local politicians who have a derisory responsibility to make sure that their communities are informed about these issues and about these policies that they're passing and helping bring into law. I understand that they're all politicians. I understand that. We get that. So in our closing remarks today, we want to thank those who joined us and those who couldn't. And until next week, thank you for joining us on Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And
life is a song worth singing. I can tell. Sing it. Life is a song worth singing. Why don't you sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand. Use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing. I got.